This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb. This November, Vermonters will cast their ballots for U.S. Senator. The incumbent, Patrick Leahy, has served in the office since 1975 and is running for another six-year term. Today, we're talking to the Republican challenger who's trying to unseat him, Scott Milne. Milne ran against incumbent Governor Peter Shumlin in 2014 and came within a hair's breadth of winning. This time, he's got his eyes on the U.S. Senate seat, and he joins us today in our Colchester studios. Scott Milne, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Good to see you and be here, Mitch. Thank you.
So, Scott, let me start by asking, Senator Leahy, as I said, has served as a Vermont senator since 1975. Why are you challenging him this year?
Thanks for the question, and thanks for the opportunity, Mitch. This is the, I think we got 27 days to go to the election. This is the first live statewide news broadcast that I've been on. So I'm looking forward to a robust conversation with you and anybody that calls in today. I felt 2014 was an important time in Vermont history. I was disturbed by the direction of the state. I think I was lucky to be in the right place at the right time and offered a voice to a lot of Vermonters who thought things were going in the wrong direction. As it turned out, we weren't as outnumbered as we thought we were, as we were told we were by most people. And I wanted to make sure I got a return on that investment. And as I look towards 2016, the incumbent senator, in my opinion, is the biggest impediment that's on the ballot this year between me being really optimistic about my grandchildren, not only being in Vermont and being economically healthy and living in a secure world that's as best as it can possibly be, but even being in America. So I think there's a lot of disconnect between what our incumbent senator says and what he does, and I'm looking forward to talking about that today.
I am curious, though, you came so close to scoring really a major upset, what would have been a major upset, by defeating Governor Shumlin in 2014. Why not run for governor again? Why take the U.S. Senate path or trying to unseat yet another longtime incumbent? I'm wondering if, you know, voters could be blamed for thinking, well, you're kind of casting around here. Why aren't you focused on, you know, one job and you want to go for that job?
I think I'm doing exactly that. I believe, you know, if you want to use the, you know, war analogy, we lost the battle. But I think we won the war in 2014 and demonstrated that Vermont was headed in the wrong direction. Who knows? But I think if it was a marijuana party lady leading the Republican ticket and Peter Shumlin got 60+% of the vote, Vermont would be a much different and, I would argue, a much worse place today than it was. I think we've got big, big problems in Washington, D.C. Vermont is really one of the only states where my story is possible. We're running a campaign with very little money. My opponent's got $6 million into this campaign, $3 million coming from special interests. We're going to have state legislative or Vermont Senate candidates spending more money in this election than we do. I think Vermont's a special place. My message to Washington can be delivered by Vermont voters. We're sick and tired of this rigged political system that leads to a rigged economy that's led to all these problems. And I would argue Patrick Leahy is the poster child for what's gone wrong in Washington in the last 50 years.
In your campaign launch and on your website, you have emphasized the need to end what you call career politics. I think you've just alluded to that in that last answer. But what exactly do you mean by career politics?
Well, I think you can go back, Mitch, to our founding. George Washington, arguably one of the more inspirational people in American history, definitely, and perhaps in world history, turned the Continental Army back over to the Congress rather than turning it into a force for him personally. After two terms as president, he stepped aside, or we might have some sort of an imperial presidency, democracy, blended thing, rather than what's really turned out to be the greatest experiment in government in human history. I believe it was not designed to be, and I was not in favor of term limits 25 years ago when I was a political science student, but this deadly concoction of special interest money propping people like Pat Leahy up election after election is ruining our country. I think Dwight Eisenhower was a prophet when he left office in 1960 and said, beware of the military-industrial congressional complex. This growing influence of money in the halls of Congress and then this revolving door between U.S. Senate offices and lobbyists is ruining our country. I'm here to offer a voice to Vermonters that agree with me. And I think it's completely plausible that I can be a humble agent for change in the United States Senate. Obviously, I need to win the election to do that.
So you said 25 years ago you would not have been in favor of term limits. Are you in favor for term limits now for a Senate seat?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've taken a two-term pledge myself, and I will work hard to influence legislation to bring term limits about. I think it's essential to get our democracy back on track.
Well, you know, like it or not, the way the Senate works is that seniority generally means power. And Patrick Leahy is currently the most senior member of the U.S. Senate. Why should Vermont voters reject the power to push for their interests that really comes with that seniority?
Well, a great question. I think I've been talking to Vermonters for over a year about this race. And the three things I hear most often from Vermonters are, has Patrick Leahy been there too long? Is Patrick Leahy too old to do that job? Or we can't afford to lose Patrick Leahy because he brings home the bacon. I listen to people when they talk about the first two points. I disagree with the third point. Our Constitution was set up so that you got states like Vermont to join a union with much more populated states because you have two senators no matter what your population is. There's a small state advantage to being in the United States Senate. I think you can make and earmarks are gone for the last 6 years because it was being so abused by people like Patrick Leahy. I think you can make a very credible argument that the big problem that we have in the United States Senate is the New England Republicans like George Aiken or the Dixie Democrats, where you had this group of 10, 20 United States senators where you had Republicans that you could maybe label as more liberal than some of the most conservative Democrats and vice versa. This group in the middle that actually went either way to get things done is virtually extinct. There's Susan Collins in Maine, and there's nobody else left in the middle. I'll be with Susan Collins. I'll be a moderate, a centrist. I'll work if there's a Democratic president. My goal will be to influence them, to get them into the middle, and help them be one of the greatest presidents in U.S. history. The gentleman I'm running against has a 42-year record of obstructing the opposite party, just as there's too many people in the Republican Party right now that their whole goal is to obstruct the other side. George Aiken, who Patrick Leahy succeeded. You know, Mitch, I'm lucky. My grandfather ran George Aiken's office in Washington for a while. From the time I was 7 years old, I heard George Aiken stories over a fishing pole from my grandfather. George Aiken was a great senator. He's the greatest senator in the last 100 years in Vermont, in my opinion. George Aiken had this great philosophy, we can't be afraid of me-tooism, meaning if the other party comes up with a great idea, we should say me too. And it's not a philosophy that's evident in my opponent's rhetoric or behavior or track record in Washington, and it's not evident enough in other senators' policies, and it'll change when Scott Milne gets there.
Craig is on the line from Vergennes. Hi, Craig.
Hi.
You've got a question for Scott Milne?
I do. So, Scott, as you may know, here in the state recently we had a victory getting suppressors finally legalized in the state. Now, in Congress, there is a bill, the Hearing Protection Act, H.R. 3799. Which would remove suppressors from the NFA registry. And I was wondering, if you are elected, would you support that bill?
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the question. And I will step back and say just in general on guns, because it's an issue I hear from a lot of people about. And the real strong vocal Second Amendment folks are not delighted with my policy on guns, but I'll step back and remind people, hopefully, what I talked about consistently in the last campaign. We need to be focused on practical solutions and not driving political ideologies to get things done. So I you know, philosophically, I think clearly in Vermont, I agree with Phil Scott, gun laws we have on the books are fine and don't need to change. Philosophically, I agree with that at a federal level, but I'm on record as saying we've got my opponent who's in favor of universal background checks and banning assault-style weapons. He's one of the most partisan liberal people in the United States Senate. So that's one extreme position.
You're not for universal background checks or banning assault weapons?
What I'm being very clear about with people, Mitch, is I'm willing to cut a deal as part of getting government on track that's going to change gun laws. And people that are just absolute black and white, the gun laws are fine. If we give them an inch, they're going to take a mile. I philosophically agree with those things. Practically, I think gun laws are going to change. I've taken a pledge to say I'm not going to support gun law changes within 120 days of one of these mass tragedies because I don't think it should be something that's done in a knee-jerk reaction. And the suppressor law and Bill 355672 and all these other things Leahy's people throw out to try to point out, those are little trees in the forest. The forest is I'm willing to consider changes to gun laws as part of getting government fixed. And I'm unpopular with some people for that, but I apologize for that. It's an honest answer.
On your website, you say that you want to work to, quote, restore power to voters by restricting cash and influence from corporate and special interests. What specific steps would you take to do that if you were elected?
The campaign that I am running, Mitch, great question, is designed we took a look. Obviously, if you insert whatever you want to be a great local legislator, you want to be a great president, anything in between. If you want to do that, the most important thing you got to do is get elected. So we took a look at how we were going to get elected. Probably money. You could argue more money might have helped us get elected. I don't think so. We're running a very low budget campaign. I'm not taking any money from special interests. I haven't made one phone call and asked anybody for money anywhere in the world. I haven't sent out one email and asked anybody for money. I haven't sent any direct, so I'm not, I don't have a fundraising person on my campaign. We're proving, and Vermont, again, to go back to what we were talking about before, Mitch, Vermont is one of the only places on earth where this story is possible. It's grassroots. We're within 2 degrees of, I'm within 2 people of knowing everybody in Vermont. We've got a story that I think is, our government is broken. The problem is this deadly concoction of career politicians and special interest money. So I'm getting elected without taking any special interest money. Even Barack Obama in his State of the Union speech this year talked about what a hassle it was to have to raise money for all these politicians. So my sense is once I get there, I'll have a lot of friends that say, hey, Scott, let's figure out how to fix this because we don't want to be stuck doing this anymore either.
Well, I'm curious then what you think about the Citizens United case. Would you fight to overturn that if you were elected?
Yes. And I will point out, as I talked about, there's a lot of nice things I could say about my opponent, but his rhetoric and the disconnect between his rhetoric and his actions on campaign finance is wrapped around Citizens United. He's been taking PAC money and special interest money long before Citizens United, and now he's claiming Citizens United is a big problem. Well, we reached out to Pat Leahy last fall and asked him to join us and run a Spirit of George Aiken $100 campaign. They laughed at us. We came back this spring and used an Elizabeth Warren template to get dirty special interest PAC money out of this election. They laughed at us. He's got over $3 million of special interest money from Mylan and Wells Fargo and Yahoo and everybody you see in the news every week with some other problem that he's using to run against me. And you've got somebody running for state senate in Chittenden County that's going to spend more money than me. So I would say to the caller, not only do I have a strategy, do I have a philosophy and a belief that we need to get money out of politics, I'm running an election that's designed to amplify that message should I be fortunate enough to represent Vermont in the United States Senate.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb, and Scott Milne is with us this hour. He's the Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate. Scott Milne, I want to talk a little bit about the EB-5 program that's been at the center of the alleged fraud case in the Northeast Kingdom. Critics have been calling this a pay-to-play visa program. Wealthy foreign citizens can get a green card investing $500,000 in the U.S., and Senator Leahy was a big supporter of the program. He now says that given everything that's happened, it should not be renewed without reform. What specific reforms? I am assuming you would like reforms of EB-5, or would you like to see it scrapped entirely?
Great question, Mitch. What I would like to see, again, and I hate to make this election about the opponent, but I don't think without – I think elections are designed to hold people accountable for what they say and what they do. I'm running against a gentleman who celebrates Sunshine Week every year and talks about the vital importance of transparency in government. That's his talk. His walk is he's got his fingerprints all over EB-5 scandals, not just in the kingdom, in Hollywood, where his daughter's a lobbyist for EB-5 special interests that have, I think, about 5 times as much money involved in EB-5 projects as we do here in Vermont. And we called on him in May of this year to release his communications about EB-5 so we could understand what went wrong, what we can learn from it, and what needs to be fixed to go forward. So he came back with some lame excuse about how he can't release emails because he gets messages from people that have domestic abuse situations and things like that. It's a completely incredible response. I think we need to see what Patrick Leahy knew and when he knew it and what he's been doing about it from his emails. And then that should be a foundation for figuring out how to fix a program. I'll point out that, you know, Patrick Leahy, when other people vote to shut down the government because they don't like something that's in it, he mocks them. Yet 2 weeks ago, he voted to shut down the government because he couldn't get his 99 colleagues that he's so influential with to bail him out on getting out from under the microscope on this EB-5 thing. So, again, it's a very specific case, and I would ask people to look at it. There's just the more attention I pay to Patrick Leahy and his record, in spite of all the good things that are actually, you know, totally accurate and true you can say about him, there's a lot of reasons why Scott Milne is going to be a better senator for Vermont. EB-5 is one of the big ones.
A couple of things I want to follow up on there. And one is that, you know, you have made vocal your criticism of Senator Leahy over the EB-5 program, but you were involved in promoting this program as well. You traveled to Asia in 2009.
Not true, but go ahead.
Well, you did travel to Asia in 2009 to meet with potential investors.
That's not promoting the program, Mitch, but go ahead.
Well, I mean, you were there ostensibly to – I mean, what were you there to do if not
to – learn about the program.
And that's all you did was to learn about it?
That's exactly what I did. I have an economic development enterprise in Windsor County. I've been working on getting permitted with all private money, without any federal help or state help or anything, that has the potential to bring 300 jobs to Windsor County. I went to Asia with my daughter, who's running my campaign, who was then an international relations student in college, and my business partner with the Vermont Chamber of Commerce to learn about EB-5. I know an awful lot about EB-5 from that trip.
In learning about it, do you feel that it's a viable program going forward?
I think it's got a place in our immigration policy, yes. I know people philosophically think we shouldn't be selling visas, and you can have, you know, short, concise arguments about that. I think there's a good place for it, and it needs to be reformed and fixed. And getting Patrick Leahy to come clean on his emails, he's the self-proclaimed godfather of the program. You know, up until 90 days ago, I think everybody in Vermont thought all of Patrick Leahy's actions on EB-5 were all to do with the kingdom, and that was bad enough. Now we realize, and it's not just Patrick Leahy. If you look around the country, Hillary Clinton's brother's involved in an EB-5 scandal. Harry Reid's son's involved in a dysfunctional EB-5 program in Nevada. It's like it's a club for family of U.S. senators or something like that. There's a lot that needs to be learned about EB-5 before we talk about shutting it down or fixing it, because it's got big problems and it goes to the root of career politicians propped up by big special interest money election after election. EB-5 is a tip of that iceberg, and I think it's important that Patrick Leahy come clean on what he knows and we get to learn from it.
Senator Leahy has heard some of these criticisms you've levied on that, you know, releasing some of the documents related to EB-5. He says that if you're accusing him of any wrongdoing, you should go ahead and call the U.S. Attorney's Office and make a formal complaint. I mean, do you have reason to believe that Senator Leahy has committed a crime?
Well, I mean, that he jumps from asking for what anybody that works for the federal government would be required to do with a Freedom of Information Act request.
Although senators are not bound by that Freedom of Information request.
They write the law for everybody else, but that's all I'm asking him to do, is to comply with what anybody else that works for the government would be required to do with a Freedom of Information Act request. He's unwilling to do that, and then he jumps from, I should call it to the special U.S. attorney that he appointed if I've got accusations. I don't have accusations. I have questions. That's what we have elections for. You know, it was reported in the press this morning, you know, Leahy's using the same reelection strategy now as he always does. Raise a whole bunch of big money, avoid debates, and ignore your opponent. I don't think it's going to work for him this time, but we'll see.
We've got a caller on the line. Richard is on the line from Montpelier. Hi, Richard.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Scott, I've got a question. I'll do the elephant in the room, Donald Trump. And the question isn't, would you endorse Donald Trump? The question is, would you vote for Donald Trump? And that, you know, your campaign speaks of straight talk, and you do straight talk. Would you give us a straight answer on that? At this point in time, would you vote for Donald Trump? And if you wouldn't, how would you explain that to the Trump Republicans in Vermont? Thank you.
You missed the news the last couple of days. I announced I'm not voting for Donald Trump.
You did say earlier, though, that you had support of him.
I did not say that, Mitch. Get your story straight. I mean, with all due respect, I've gone out of my way to say I'm not supporting anybody in the presidential election, and that I thought typically votes should be private, but I think it's important for somebody running for federal office to be transparent with people about what they're doing. So I've said I'll let people know as it gets closer to election what's happening. And I'll, to the meat of your question, sir, I'll say I, you know, thought about what happened over the weekend. Happened 10 years ago, but the news that was released. And, you know, I thought about this girl I had a great conversation with in Brandon at a parade over the summer and said, you know, it's really important to me to win the 12-year-old vote. Let us know how we're doing. Had this kid at Tunbridge Fair at 6 in the morning, this 10-year-old kid from Fairleigh who took me around and showed me his mom's cows, his brother's oxen, his sheep. I said, it's important for me that you let me know how we're doing. You know, I want to have a campaign that inspires people like you. We were at Williston Central School on Friday with these great young Vermonters that are just an awesome inspiration for us. And it just seemed to me that it reached a tipping point where I couldn't honestly look at kids and say, I want to be an inspiring candidate to you, and yet condone what was continuing to happen. And I will say that I know people on the other side say Trump supporters are a basket of deplorables. I've talked to over 1,000 people that are supporting Donald Trump this over the course of this campaign. Not one of them is deplorable. And I'm sorry. It is straight talk. I'm not going to be voting for Donald Trump.
So the tipping point for you was the release of that tape where he said those things about women that we've all heard by now. I am sorry. I must take responsibility for my mistake. You did not endorse Donald Trump at any
Absolutely
time.
Not.
However, I would like to ask why it took this long to get to this tipping point when other things were said that Donald Trump has said from the very beginning of his campaign, things about Mexicans, about Muslims, mocking a reporter with disabilities. Why did it take you this long to disavow and separate yourself from Donald Trump?
Well, and pretending he didn't know what the KKK was obviously a big deal, Mitch. I looked at, again, one of the things I promised people last time, I'm not perfect at it, but I'm pretty good at it, is listening before I act. I saw what happened with my opponent and the Sanders supporters who felt like they were disenfranchised by having him jump out front and not even give Bernie time to take root. Clearly, I was on record for supporting other people in the Republican primary. But the voters spoke, and it's a democracy, and I thought it was important for me to not get out in front of disavowing or supporting Donald. If I was on board and totally supportive of him, I would have been out early. I wanted to listen before I acted, and it got to be time to act.
He is the standard bearer of the Republican Party. I wonder if you feel that it hurts you to have his name on the ballot with that Republican next to it. Then, you know, people look down and they see U.S. Senate Republican Scott Milne. Does that hurt you at all? Does it put you at a disadvantage?
It's Vermont. I think we're independent. We have a history of looking beyond what you see in sound bites. And our campaign is designed to be grassroots. I think it's going to be about Scott Milne and Pat Leahy.
Let's go back to the phones. Tim is on the line from White River Junction. Hi, Tim. You're on with Scott Milne.
Oh, hey. Thanks for taking my call, Mitch. Hey, I just wanted to go on record. I've always been a supporter of Pat Leahy. I have voted for him for as long as I can remember. And after the events of this summer with his failure to support Bernie Sanders, I do find myself as an undecided right now at this point. If Scott does go down to Washington, D.C., I'm just kind of curious to see how he'll have his head in D.C. but be able to keep his feet on the ground here in Vermont.
Thanks, Tim.
Sounds like a Grateful Dead song or something, Tim. I got to figure out what you're talking about there.
I'll go through my catalog and take a look. Meanwhile,
I'm driving up here with my daughter, who's one of thousands of great young Vermonters who's been blessed to grow up in Vermont, and we appreciate what's great about Vermont. I've taken a 2-term pledge. I think whether you do power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely, or all kinds of analogies like that. I've taken a 2-term pledge. I think our Congress and U.S. Senate is designed to be public service, not to be a career. Go down, serve, come back to your community, your business, and live under the laws that you made. That's what I'm hoping to do. And the private conversations that I have with my kids, and my son Keith is also the other. I have zero paid staff on my campaign. To get back to the earlier question about how we're going to get money out of politics, running this campaign with no paid staff. My two kids are two of the primary people that are helping me out. I got about 10 people that are very involved. What I say to my kids is, if I turn into a narcissistic jerk because power goes to my head, make sure you smack me. And I agree with you. It's a problem. And I'm not saying, Welch and Sanders and Leahy are narcissistic, but I just think it's important for people to view it as public service and it's not a career. And I promise that's what it's going to be for me. And I'm going to work to change Congress once I get there.
I want to read this email, a question we got from Mike in Colchester, who writes, I would like to know why Mr. Mellon has avoided answering questions that directly relate to policy. He appears to be very hesitant about taking a stance on any issue, including his support for Trump, until the recent controversial tape release. Most importantly, though, what are Scott Mellon's policy goals? Please be specific.
Well, again, I think that's a narrative that's similar to your misperception, Mitch, about my coming out and supporting Donald Trump. So there's a lot of whether it's fueled by the Vermont Democratic Party or, the 60 people that work on my opponent's congressional, in his U.S. Senate office, plus his $6 million campaign that's, out pumping this information all the time. What I will say is, if I could, get in the time machine and go back to, 1947 or whatever it would be and play a game of dodgeball with Pat Leahy, based on what I've seen in this campaign, he would beat me. He's a pretty good debate dodger. It's less than 4 weeks to the election. This is the first live statewide news program I've been on. And this is a U.S. Senate seat that comes up once every 6 years. I have a Republican nomination. I would argue the media hasn't paid proper attention to this race. Anybody that wants to, if Patrick Leahy was so concerned about what issues are, we should be having debates. In the governor's race 2 years ago, I will congratulate Peter Shulman. He didn't debate Dodge. I think we had two big debates by now, and I had been on news media all the time. So I'm happy to answer any question. If you got a question about policy, call back and call and ask in. But I get policy positions on my website, and I haven't dodged one question.
Well, Scott,
so go ahead
fair,
and let it fly.
I mean, this is an opportunity for you. This is a statewide news program. We have you for the hour here. This is an opportunity for you to talk about your policy positions.
Okay.
There's no one that's going to argue with you. You've got me asking some questions and follow-ups, but this is an opportunity for you to talk about those specific policy goals.
Thanks, Mitch. The most important policy and the most important thing we can do for future generations of Americans is to change the corrupt system in Washington that really has taken root in, post-World War II. That corrupt system is special interest money propping up career politicians like my opponent election after election. That's the single most important issue. Fixing that problem is the most positive thing that can happen. And you can talk about any other issue you want, and it's directly connected to that. The opiate epidemic, which is ravaging not just Vermont, but America. The pharmaceutical industry has spent $1 billion lobbying people like Patrick Leahy in the last 10 years. We know, I believe we know, but I suspect if we don't know it, that the pharmaceutical industry is going to have a sordid history like the tobacco industry of, when they were denying that cigarettes cause cancer. They've gotten, Howard Dean was a canary in the coal mine over 10 years ago talking about these opiates and how bad they were and that they needed to be regulated. But whether people weren't smart enough to regulate it or whether the lobbyist money prevented people from thinking about lobbying it, legislating it, something happened and it's led to one of the biggest crisis in American health history.
What would you do about the pharmaceutical industry negotiating prices? What kind of things would you do to change their influence and power?
I would. That's the biggest issue in the campaign, Mitch. We need to get special interest money out of elections. Now, you have Patrick Leahy who claims he's a longtime proponent of spending reforms, and he complains about Citizens United. I got a different history in my family. My mother, Marion Milne, got elected to the Vermont House in 1994. She didn't come in with, here's the 10 things I'm going to change, here's what we need to do. She was, I'm naive enough to believe I can make a difference. She got elected. She was handicapped and widely viewed as not being able to get elected. She won. My mom and Karen Kitzmiller, a Democrat from Montpelier, co-sponsored Vermont's campaign finance bill in the 90s. I would argue that was a more significant step towards campaign finance reform than anything my opponent has done in 42 years in the United States Senate.
I want to ask a specific question relating to policy, and this has to do with environmental protection. Gord Banjo writes on our website, Patrick Leahy has a very good record on environmental protection. The Republican platform calls for taking authority away from the EPA, pulling out of the Paris Climate Agreement, and vastly increasing fossil fuel production. Where do you stand on those issues?
Pretty close to Patrick Leahy.
So you would be in favor of maintaining Paris Climate Agreement, et cetera?
Yeah, yeah, I think, right. I think
so
it's one of the
pretty in lockstep
one,
with him
one
on
one of the biggest
issues.
Problems we have. I can save elaboration for another question, but I'm in.
I want to fit another phone call before we go to a break. We've got Alan on the line from Newport. Hi, Alan.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm well, thank you.
Well, one of the things I've noticed is that Scott likes to listen to juveniles instead of adults, and our forefathers were wise enough to make it feasible for only 21-year-olds to vote. Of course, we're losing that every day. They keep wanting younger and younger people who are still wet behind the ears to vote. And Jimmy Carter was a failure as president, and he listened to his daughter, Amy. This is so ridiculous.
Alan, do you have a question for Scott Milne?
Advice to people that are running for high office?
Okay, I'm just wondering if you have a question specifically for Scott Milne. Nope. Okay. We've lost Alan. Let's move on to a topic, foreign policy, that I want to get to. The civil war in Syria. The U.S. is backing the rebels. Russia is backing Syrian President Bashar Assad. Both sides ostensibly are fighting against ISIS. What role should the United States have in the Syrian conflict?
Well, a great question. A huge problem. One of many. You know, as I said when I launched my campaign, Mitch, our nation and our planet are in perilous times. Clearly, it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback, but I think the lesson from Syria, and history repeats itself, so it's important that we remember lessons. The lesson from Syria, I believe, is we don't draw lines in the sand unless we're going to back them up. And clearly, John McCain was right. We should have instituted a no-fly zone when we had a chance. At this point, it's too late to put in a no-fly zone. We need to, you know, work with NGOs and try to set up some safe havens to avoid the humanitarian catastrophe. We got to avoid getting sucked into a global confrontation. I mean, we're already. I listened to Senator Leahy on Monday, and he, you know, the question was, do we have to be careful we're not getting back to a Cold War? And he was right. We're in an early version of a Cold War now, so we need to. You know, work with our allies and try to just prevent, you know, hopefully we got the ISIS problem there too. So it's a very, very complicated mess. We need to learn from them. As with the Bush administration, we made mistakes. There's mistakes made here by President Obama. And
sounds like you're saying no boots on the ground, though. You wouldn't be in favor of getting involved in actual sending U.S. actual military troops.
Right.
Right. Okay. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Mitch Wertlieb, and Republican candidate for U.S. Senate Scott Milne is joining me today in our Colchester studios. Question from David in Washington, Scott, who writes, as a small business owner in Vermont, I am seeing my customer base decreasing, apparently due to older customers and younger people leaving the state for lack of opportunity here. What is your position to address this?
Thanks, David. Is he from Washington, Vermont?
I believe so.
Oh, good. I'm from Washington, Vermont, too, so I don't think it's a planted question. I think it's a different question at a federal level than at a state level, but I would argue that one of the most important things we need to get towards is a balanced federal budget. The federal deficit is $19 trillion right now. It's increased about 40-fold since Pat Leahy's been there. More disturbing, if you look at the promises that we've made and commitments that we've made monetarily that aren't on the books, we've got about $160 trillion deficit. So we need to get back to balanced budgets. We need to not have, like Pat Leahy did last month, vote to shut down the government because you can't get your way on a relatively, compared to, you know, the economic vitality of the country, a relatively insignificant thing like EB-5. We need to have, you know, what happens when you have all these votes to shut down the government? Business wants predictability. We lose predictability. We lose economic vitality. So I'll be a centrist. I'll be predictable. I'll be transparent. I got up at 4 this morning, only spent about 45 minutes working on my private business. But that 45 minutes, I've got more experience in the private sector between 4 and 4:45 this morning than my opponent has in the private sector in 50 years.
It seems to me that the shutdown of the government, the whole battling over the budget, there was Zika virus money that was involved in that. There were concerns about Planned Parenthood as well, and weren't Republicans in the Senate trying to block any Planned Parenthood funding? I don't think it was specifically EB-5 situations that was Senator Leahy's argument for shutting down the government.
Senator Leahy's argument for shutting down the government was EB-5. Other people's, you know, it's the partisan divide. Everybody does this game of I'm against Planned Parenthood, I'm against them guys defunding the virus. So they each go on their cable news station and get famous with their own sort of with their own basis. We need to have a United States Senate that has populated with people like George Aiken and Scott Milne that aren't afraid to say me too. The government was not shut down this time, fortunately.
Right.
But Patrick Leahy's claim was he voted against it because of EB-5.
We've got Scott on the line with us from Burlington. Hi, Scott. You're on with Scott Milne. Hello, Scott.
Hey there. Thanks for taking my question. Hello.
Sure. Go right ahead.
Hey, I just wanted to know, if you were elected, Scott, what two Senate committees would you be interested in serving on from the A category, and why do you think you're qualified to serve on those committees?
Well, I appreciate the question, Scott. I believe, again, I talked about my mom when she ran for the Vermont legislature. I'm naive enough to believe that I can make a difference. I think that's what our country is founded on, citizen legislators being good listeners and thoughtful people. So I'll be a freshman legislator from Vermont, and if I have a choice, I've got a lifelong interest in foreign policy. I'd like to land there sometime. Somehow. And after the number two committee, you know, agriculture is important to Vermont. I think I've got a good business background. I could be of value there. And that's where I'll be headed.
To follow up on that, we have this comment from Ruth, who writes, many successful candidates start by running for local and state office so they get some credibility and experience. It was certainly good enough for your mother, as you have pointed out, Scott, who was a fine legislator, Ruth writes. Why wouldn't Scott Milne first run for state Senate or House first? It might serve him in good stead instead of trying to unseat a very effective U.S. senator.
Thanks. Great question, Ruth. And thanks for mentioning my mom. My mom was a great public servant and not so much with elected office, but she ran for the legislature when she was 60. I think she was lucky. I had just gotten into our travel business then and was able to, enable her to be comfortable that the business would be okay while she was being a public servant. I think it's a root cause of what's wrong with our country. The skills and the traits, particularly with the way the media and the congressional industrial complex works these days, the skills that it takes to get elected election after election are the opposite of what good leadership is. I would argue what it takes to get elected time after time is more and more important to be a good fundraiser. But you run polls, you figure out what people want to hear, you pretend you're leading that parade so you can get reelected. When you disagree with people, you lose elections. So I'm not contaminated by a history of pretending I'm leading parades that I was told to lead by polls. I think you can look at my opponent's record and see a whole bunch of parades that he says he's in front of now, but his voting record doesn't match that. I believe with all the problems in Washington, somebody like Scott Milne is important to have in the mix down there. And I just am very, very optimistic that Vermont's going to be very proud if you give me a chance.
What's your view on Judge Merrick Garland, who was nominated, of course, by President Obama to the Supreme Court? Senate Republicans have refused to take up that nomination. Do you think that he should be voted on? Do you think he should be approved to the Supreme Court, if so?
I believe that presidents should have great deference in nominating and getting Supreme Court justices appointed. I'm clearly in favor of Merrick Garland or anybody getting a fair hearing. And I haven't been through those hearings, but my sense is I would support Garland after those hearings.
What about the issue that has been really roiling the country for quite some time now? And this is about police shootings of unarmed black men around the country. It's been at the forefront of the news. What do you think are the underlying causes behind these shootings?
We've got a country that's founded, and Vermont has a special place in the whole history of it, Mitch. We're the first constitution in the country and arguably on the planet that abolished slavery. So Vermont's got a lot to be proud of, but, you know, we've got a country that has, you know, done horrible things in our founding with slavery. And I was on had a conversation with somebody else where they said, how are we going to solve that? And I go, we're sure not going to solve it with a new president and a new United States Senate. It's something that we need to continue to move forward on. What I briefly ran for governor, I made two promises to people. I'll listen before I talk. I think we need to be doing what's practical, not what's political. We've talked about a couple of those things. As a federal office holder, what I hope people believe about me, and I'm not a perfect person by any means, but I believe all people are created equal. I believe that to the foundation of my soul. Everything I do as a United States senator, should I be lucky enough to get elected, is going to come from that foundation. And this is a big issue that I don't have an answer for, but I totally agree that it's a huge problem. And there's two, you know, on the and a lot. I mean, I don't want to tie everything back to lobbyists and money, but, you know, this 94 crime bill, I think, caused a lot of these problems. My opponent supported it because it was poll. I would argue because it was poll tested and popular. It was the popular thing to do then. I was a travel agent in 1994, and I was against it. So
let me ask then, if it's all right, if I can ask your opinion on the Black Lives Matter movement. Is that something that you support, or do you sympathize with that movement?
I support and sympathize with Black Lives Matter. My campaign, I can look and see some tactics could have been better, and Chamber of Commerce, every organization could have some different tactics. But clearly, we have a problem, and it needs to get more sunlight shown on it.
I want to make sure we get one more caller in here. Paul is on the line from Richmond. Hello, Paul. You're on with Scott Milne.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Mr. Milne, I'm interested to know specifically what you would do to eliminate the power of lobbyists and special interests. I agree with you that it's probably the single biggest problem in Washington currently, but I haven't heard you say how you would do that. Citizens United, a Supreme Court decision, how are you going to address that? I think their decision, even though I don't agree with it, was rational because they are giving corporations who are taxed and who don't have a vote, they basically are taxed without representation, it gives them a chance to vote with their money. And I don't agree with it, but I'm wondering what you would do because I don't see that you have a solution for that that I've heard.
Well, I would respectfully disagree. I've designed a campaign that's to amplify the message loudly and clearly from Vermont that we're sick of special interests buying and paying for elections, election cycle after election cycle. The details of how we get through a constitutional amendment to change Citizens United is complicated. But my campaign is designed to amplify the message that you just espoused, that it's wrong and it needs to change. And it's something that we put a lot of thought into as we designed this campaign.
It does seem like a good question, though, because to be quite frank about it, I have heard politicians of every stripe say they don't like special interests. I have never heard a politician say, I'm all for special interests. I'm all for lobbyists' influence. I understand that politicians don't always tell the truth. But is there a strategy? Is there a way to get at this issue? And we need to be brief here so we can wrap this up. But what would you try to do specifically other than just say this is a problem?
I don't think you've seen a politician running for a credible candidate for statewide office running a $100 George Aiken spirited campaign in the last 40 years. I'm doing that. My talk is matching my walk on campaign finance, on term limits, and bridging the partisan divide. I'm going to continue to do that for 27 more days. And if I'm fortunate enough to be elected, I promise you I'll tell the truth. One of the problems we have in Vermont, Mitch, is news media has been sucked out of economic vitality with these changes brought on by the internet over the last 15 years. Vermont's a small state. We don't really do a good job of covering our congressional delegation. They don't have enough press conferences. I'll be completely transparent. News media will be knowing what I'm doing down there all the time, much more so than we do now.
Scott Milne is the Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate, and Vermont Edition will host a debate between Milne and the incumbent Democratic Senator Patrick Leahy. We hope that you will tune in for that. Scott Milne, I want to thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
It's good to be with you, and sorry about our Red Sox, Mitch. Holy schmoly.
I think we can all agree on that, except for those Yankee fans listening.